This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm with Jack Denley. How are you, Jack?
I'm very well, thank you.
And Craig Pope. How are you, Craig?
Excellent, thank you.
Excellent. And you're from Patina, which is a big plastic or PET container manufacturer for bottles. And one of the reasons we actually got you on the show, even though we've done two podcasts already with you, was because you're launching a new PET plastic wine bottle. Do you want to, who's the best person, Jack or Craig? Who's the best person to give me an overview of this plastic bottle?
Yeah, give you a quick overview. So we launched this bottle onto the market this year. We have
into the UK market or the world?
Into the world, yeah. So we produced this product in Sweden, up in a little place called Lidköping. And we brought it to the market really sort of on the back of quite a lot of news in the wine industry that wine bottles were getting much more scarce and much more expensive. And so, you know, if you can't get a bottle of, you know, wine bottle in France, you know, the wine industry is in a bit of bother. So we created two designs, a Bordeaux style and a Burgundy style, in a 750 and a 1 litre. And the reason we sort of did those in the most classic styles is to offer consumers the choice of something they see on the shelf all the time. So they don't have to change their consumer behaviour at all. They can just take a bottle off the shelf, serve it, and then everyone sort of sees it as a bottle of wine. So it's significantly lighter than glass by about 10%, so it's about 49 grams versus the industry standard for glass, which is about 450-ish. And we see it as sort of quite an interesting way for the wine industry to decarbonise their operations.
Yeah, just to clarify, it's a tenth of the weight of glass.
About a tenth, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And who's buying these plastic bottles?
It's a mix. So we see we've had predominantly interest from Central and Northern Europe. So there are people who are looking to get into the Nordics, where PET wine bottles are quite common. Mm-hmm. And often the sort of the alcohol monopolies there will mandate that they want a specific amount in PET. So people will tender for that business and then move their wine from Central Europe. And then certainly Eastern Europe, there's a lot more domestic demand for the bottle, where it's just a little bit cheaper to put their product into plastic versus glass at the moment, and they can service that domestic market a lot easier.
Okay. Yeah, and then we have the, you know, festivals and events as well. So as Jack said, you know, we heavily focused on the Nordics for part of our business, but we see from our interaction with, you know, Vin Monopolet, Systembolaget, Alco, you know, specifying carbon friendly packaging, and within that packaging for, you know, wine and spirits, PET plays a key role. And it helps them achieve their commitment of a 50% carbon footprint reduction by 2023. So the portfolios were designed to support that. They're also designed to support the other markets we touched on. And, you know, it's been encouraging because we're seeing consumers choose PET over glass when they understand the, you know, carbon credentials of the product on shelf. And I think Systembolaget do a fantastic job of that. You can look at the website and they'll clearly communicate the difference between the packaging formats. And
well, let's get, what are the, let's talk about the price difference first, because glass uses a lot of energy to manufacture and to recycle as well. It uses almost as much energy to recycle glass as it does to manufacture it in the first place. So how much CO2 do you use on a plastic bottle versus a glass bottle?
When it leaves the factory, there's about a third as much CO2 as produced. So I think to make a glass bottle, you have to get it to about 1600 degrees Celsius for about 50 hours to make that. For PET, you just blow the preform, and you can blow quite a lot of preforms every hour. So production footprint significantly lower. Then if you're moving that bottle to where it's going to be filled, you can fit a lot more PET bottles on a truck or a boat or whatever.
Why is that?
Because they're lighter. So if you get four pallets of glass bottles, you're going to meet the weight level for that transport much earlier than you would with PET bottles.
Okay.
So you're moving more per trip.
I also noticed the bottles look like, you've shown me a 750 here, and it looks smaller than a 750ml bottle. So do you get higher density, or is it still a case of 12? Or
you can fit more in a box, and the boxes are smaller, so therefore you can fit more in a truck. So yeah, that's another benefit.
But that's due to the thinner wall compared to glass, and there's a benefit in terms of secondary packaging and transportation through the supply chain. So I think once consumers can overcome that visual difference on shelf where the bottle looks smaller, but you're actually getting the same volume. There is a story, you know, all the way through the supply chain to quantify those benefits in terms of carbon and cost savings.
I must admit, when I saw this, I was thinking, this must be like a 600, 500 mil bottle. It doesn't look like a 750 mil. It looks a little bit smaller. So carbon footprint, about a third of glass, which isn't, I mean, I was hoping for it to be a fraction, you know, a tenth of glass or 1% of glass or something like that. And what about cost-wise? What does a plastic bottle cost versus a... Obviously, you don't want to tell us your commercial secrets here, but you must have a, be able to tell us a rough idea.
No, but, you know, if you're looking at an ex-works price around, you know, 20 cents and...
For a plastic bottle?
Yeah, correct. And, yeah, the resin market fluctuates and that will influence the price on a monthly basis. Versus glass right now where, you know, you can hear it from, you know, 45 cents and beyond for some of the smaller players. So, yeah, there's a cost advantage. Logistics play a role. So, you know, where you're distributing the goods from, as Jack said, we, you know, we can produce them in Sweden. We can also produce them in the Czech Republic. So it opens up both Northern Europe and Central Eastern Europe. And, yeah, you know, we can land those bottles in cost effectively. But when you're talking about measuring cost, I think the interchangeability of PET versus other packaging formats is an appeal. It's designed to run down existing filling lines. There are some change parts required for to apply the closure, but it's a small investment. And, you know, we've proven it across a number of different co-packers or wineries. So cost-effective, can deliver the performance, is 100% recyclable at the end of its life, is available, you know, for seasonal peaks. If you've got a shortage for glass, we can turn on PET really quick. So, you know, that's really important to continue, you know, the product getting out into market. So there's a lot of advantages right now, but you know, no investment required on the lines. And I think that's a real barrier for some other packaging formats. We know some wineries are very well invested in existing lines. And, you know, to spend further capex to introduce a new packaging format, it's got to make sense, or there's got to be very strong demand for it. You know, if you're investing considerable sums, you want to make sure you've got a contracted volume sitting behind that. But, you know, we've developed a product with the screw thread and can be used on existing lines. I think that's you know, something that shouldn't be overlooked. With customers, as we onboard, you know, we send out samples for testing. That normally results in a second phase, larger trial when they start to, you know, run at faster speeds. And, you know, and then we onboard the customer. But, you know, it's a total view of the supply chain we need to look at.
Let's look at the how long the glass bottle, or how long the wine stays fresh compared to a glass bottle. Because, you know, glass bottles have a reputation of being sort of suitable for long-term aging. Plastic bottles, when they first came out, you know, you could, red wines were a little bit more stable because they've got tannins as well as acidity, hopefully, which helps them stay fresher for longer. But, you know, white wines, six months for a red wine were that when they first came out, that was the standard length. And then they changed the bottles a little bit, and they made them a little bit smarter with some oxygen barriers there. And I was hearing, you know, 1 year plus sort of thing for them with the new bottles. Your things say that you've got a 6 months for a monolayer and 18 months for a multi-layer. And I presume a multi-layer is plastic, oxygen scavenger, plastic, and then the oxygen just goes through the plastic like it doesn't exist, but then it gets mopped up on the way through. Is that your 18 months? And is that what you guys have done with your bottle?
And look, you know, you can come work for us and sell the bottles. So it was a very good explanation. But the reason why we have different options is, you know, we've got some wines that are turning over, young wines, very quickly and require a particular price point in market. So the monolayer will come at a price reduction to the multi. It's more expensive for us to produce. But the multi-layer gives you that extended shelf life and, you know, it's horses for courses, really. So that's two options the markets consider. Some of the bigger volume players, you know, who are in discussions with some of the leading retailers that are really being driven hard on price and the wine's going to turn over, you know, monolayer is being considered. For others where perhaps distance, you know, is a consideration, then multi-layer gives you that extra security.
Okay. And what's the cost difference between a monolayer and a multi-layer? You mentioned 25p pints for a bottle. Is that a mono layer or multi layer?
Call it mono for the sake of the conversation, and call the upcharge another, you know, 5 cents for the multi layer. That's the premium. So
how do you make it?
The injection molding process, where we blend the base resin material along with the additives to provide the barrier. Any colorant is dosed. And injection molded through a screw in a machine, which goes out, comes out of a mold in the shape of a preform, which looks like a small test tube. Those test tubes then are blown into the bottle mold with, you know, heat and air, if I put it quite simply, which gives us the bottle that's in your hand. But yeah, what's really important is the design of the preform, how that interfaces with the design of the bottle, so you get the stretch ratios right, you get the best performance for, you know, top load, but also for, you know, shelf life as well, how you stretch the material, get maximum benefit out of it.
Yeah, so you don't want anything too thin, do you?
No, you want a nice even wall thickness, and the base is also, you know, very, very important as well for stability on the line. So all these things come into consideration when we design the bottle.
So when I think of it as a PET oxygen scavenger, PET, it's not, it's PET with oxygen scavenger blended in with the PET.
For the monolayer option, yes.
For the monolayer?
Yes.
And the two layer, how do you make the
two layer? The multi-layer is, it's a specialised process in injection, but I think it will bore most people here, but the preforms effectively cracked and they inject the barrier into the preform during production. I mean, it's a very, very clever process, but that's how you get a dedicated barrier, very precise, and hence why the price goes up.
Only 5p though, not too much.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it comes back to the point around consumers looking at more eco-friendly solutions. They're happy to pay a small premium once they understand the credentials of the product. However, I think that the PET bottle is a very exciting proposition overall, but in terms of cost, certainly has the advantage right now, and can offer numerous benefits.
Okay. You mentioned a couple of things about the colour. And one of the problems with glass bottles is that the turning leaf colour that's very popular with wine bottles is almost a pollutant to a glass manufacturer looking to recycle it, because you can't use turning leaf glass for anything other than turning leaf glass. You can use all sorts of coloured glass for all sorts of things, but if you hand in a glass bottle for recycling, you've got to turn it into another glass wine bottle, whereas you can't turn it into jam jars or whatever. Do you get the same problem with plastic? You know, if you use plastic turning, whatever you call it, I think you call it antique glass, is it?
Oh. Antique green.
We call it, yeah. So
antique green.
I guess before I'll hand over to Craig on sort of the actual sort of the recycling of it, I think the reason we pick this colour is because it gives the best protection against light. So it's a mixture of amber and green, which are the best for those wavelengths. So certainly as a PET wine bottle, it's one of the extra protections that we want to ensure is there.
Yeah.
And again, adds that familiarity to consumers. But Craig will tell you a bit more about how they sort of go into the stream after.
Yeah, we keep referencing Sweden, but it's a good market to reference. CSD bottles, juice bottles, beer bottles and wine bottles are handled in the dairy system together. They're segregated by colour.
Opposed to glass, clear glass.
Yeah, if we just ignore glass for the sake of the conversation on the PET, bottle-to-bottle recycling, clear and light blue is the perfect material.
High-value
stuff. Then you've got like a secondary tier market for textiles and strappings and everything else. So the wine bottle does enter into that market, but we know that there's Carlsberg, for example, in the Nordics, have a green bottle, very similar, carries a deposit, same as the wine bottle, I think it's 1 krona. It's returned, it's recycled, has value. On top of this, we've actually been working with Veolia, one of the leading recycling partners in the Nordics, to process that green material that's been segregated into new forms of packaging that we can use into the market, because we can offer green packaging to our customers and add colours. So it's a clear PET bottle adding colours. Well, actually, we've got a really valuable resource here that we can use that has a green colour. So that's a special project we're working on at the moment, so we can make, you know, a better value of that material, because it obviously comes at a cost advantage. And, you know, in today's world, that's something that's really interesting to some of the brands we work with.
In the Nordic markets where you're using it as DRS, they separate the coloured glass from the clear or blue glass. And then colored plastic is of a lower grade that might be used for other manufacturing, like strapping or whatever it is. But you're trying to then now at the moment get it reused into
bottle to bottle. And you know, rigid plastics is the largest user of rPET material. I think 70% of all material processed. We have extensive understanding around, you know, processing of rPET flakes and pellets and the impact of colour and everything else. So, you know, it's a great market to work in, high return rates. We respect the packaging. We design it for end of life, and we're forever trying to find solutions. And I think just another really good example, some of the work we're doing, we supply a lot of beer kegs to one of the top, you know, tier brewers globally. We've just converted that beer keg to a clear keg. It goes in a secondary outer box, but we now have, you know, clear PET instead of a coloured PET going into the recycling stream. We're one step away from making that perfectly bottle-to-bottle recyclable. So, yeah, it's step by step. You know, we work with these brands and we share our knowledge and work together, and we're finding and introducing more sustainable solutions to the market. So.
Okay, the bottle that you've shown me, it looks like just a normal screw cap bottle. Obviously, it's a heck of a lot lighter, but you've got these weird bits of plastic holding the lid onto the thing. And I've seen this before, and it's a hell of a thing to rip them off and get the lid away. Why the heck are you putting little bits of plastic to hold the lid on to the bottle? I mean, once you know, you need a tamper evident, but once you've done your tamper evident, why?
Yeah, so what you're holding in your hand there is called a tethered closure. And this is something that is going to be enforced by legislation. So you'll see...
European legislation. So it doesn't affect us.
Well, it doesn't affect us, but you'll see people like...
It's one of the Brexit benefits is we can pollute more. Come on.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. But you'll see a lot of brands are already putting it into the UK market as well. So people want to standardise their range. So the benefit of it is that you'll have your cap and your bottle recycled together. So because our wine bottle is made from plastic, it will be covered within the legislation coming in. So this is a prototype tethered closure for the wine industry. So we want to get everyone ready for legislation coming down the tracks. And that's the great thing about the plastics legislation in the EU is you've got this timeline that you can follow. So we can get everyone ready and there'll be no surprises for when you've got this legislation that's going to come in. Well, it's by 2024.
But that won't apply to wine glass bottles with corkscrews and
won't apply to glass. No, it's just
aluminium screws or anything.
No, you're not going to need to tether your cork in. No.
Yeah, but that's a prototype though from a supplier that's looking ahead. Obviously, our bottles are compatible with Nova Twist polypropylene plastic closures, as well as your aluminium ROPP as well. So, there's same options are available for screw thread, PETs, glass.
Okay, well, let's talk a wee bit about one of the things that plastic bottles have is nothing personal. They've got a reputation for being cheap wines, yeah? In the UK particularly, it's high volume throughputs. Part of that's associated with the fact that the wines have a shorter shelf life and therefore it's best suited for high volume moving wines, and those high volume moving wines tend to be more the cheaper end of the spectrum. In the UK, when they brought in screw caps, they did a brilliant job. Tesco's, because it was Tesco's who really drove the screw cap market in the UK. They said, look, everything we want as much onto screw cap as we can. Obviously, some markets like some of the Italians, they won't allow screw caps on their premium wines because they've got rules that say that you must have rules. But the rest of the, you know, New Zealand, for example, went almost 100% screw cap. The whole country went almost 100% screw cap. And what that meant was that when Tesco started enforcing screw cap, there were premium wines selling at £10-15 a bottle that were on screw cap, which meant that unlike the American market, where Americans got this view that screw caps were a low quality product, we didn't really get into the same issue with it in the UK, because we were seeing high-value, high-quality products with screw caps. Plastic bottles, if you're not careful, they're just going to be considered cheap. So is there anything you guys are doing to try and help raise it? Because I know you've mentioned the Nordic markets, and you know you can get really good quality wines in bag and box in the Nordic markets, whereas you don't get them here because it's the cheap end of the market, whereas they've got high-quality wines in them. Is there anything you guys are trying to do to make sure that the wines don't get a perception of cheapness?
Yeah, I would say that cost is a consideration between the different closures. So we know there's a price differential. Being a packaging purist, having mixed materials for sustainable solutions, you know, I ask questions. You know, we see other formats in the market made of mixed materials.
When you're saying that, you mean like glass and aluminium, glass and cork?
Yeah, well, or like pouches inside, paper, you know, paper outer.
Yeah.
You need to disassemble and break that down and present that to the recycling stream, and not every consumer is going to do that. We know with our bottle, PET is the most widely recycled PET material, but you know, with a PP closure on the top, you know, that will be recycled.
The
jargon's come back.
It's funny because before I went to university, I worked in a rope factory making plastic rope for about 2 or 3 years, running an extruder. You know, polyethylene, polypropylene, all that sort of stuff. I'm completely used to it, and the color adjustments and all that. I lived that world for quite a few years, but I know a lot of people don't know what you mean when they say PE and PP and PET.
And those materials have a different density when they're mechanically recycled, they're separated. There's value in that. So I think trying to avoid mixing materials, for however that's down to really the choice of the producer.
Yeah, I think the other thing for us is in giving the bottlers and the winemakers as much information about our product to give them the trust to put their better wines in. So we do a lot of research to make sure that, you know, if you're putting in for 18 months, we'll give you all the data to make sure that you know your wine's going to taste just as good in 18 months as it would in glass. Mm. And then the more confidence they have, the more confidence they have then to pass on their consumers. And I think there's a large amount of trust between consumers and the wines that they love drinking. So I think if a wine producer is comfortable putting their sort of a medium wine, and we say this is perfect for wines anywhere between £8 to £20. So if they're putting a £20 bottle of wine that they are used to drinking into plastic, then I think the customers trust their wine producers and the wine that they love drinking. And there's that connect that binds those things together.
Yeah. And look, we don't think PET bottles are going to take over the world, by the way. You know, they play a role in the packaging mix they can be used.
Yeah, you guys only want like 10% of all bottles manufactured under plastic.
That'll be fine.
Let's not get greedy here. I've spent a lot of time on ChatGPT, getting it to do research for me on the costs of aluminium packaging versus glass versus plastic. And whilst I don't trust everything ChatGPT tells me, when you get it to do the math and you can follow the math through about, you know, how many kilojoules do you need to mount aluminium versus glass and how much do you need for a kilo and all that, you can double check, and it starts to look like aluminium looks pretty good as a closure. From your point of view, how does aluminium as an alternative closure compare to your PET bottle?
So you're talking about the closure for the top?
No, I'm talking about a can of aluminium, an aluminium can of wine versus a plastic PET bottle, because we know both of them are significantly better from a carbon point of view than glass. So which one is the better one?
Yeah, I mean, I think they serve different arenas. So I think certainly in the UK, people were always used to getting a small bottle of wine to sit on the train with as they're going somewhere. That format's gone from small format PET into cans, and that's just a convenience thing. For us, in the 750 space, which is the bottle we're producing, you can't really produce an alternative in that shape, in that style, made of aluminium. Sure, you could have a large can, but I think for the consumption moment, where this is going to sit on someone's table, that familiarity of having a wine-shaped bottle in the same colour as a glass bottle is where that fits. For aluminium, it's a bit more on the go, and I think that's where people associate aluminium with a lot more than they would. You know, you wouldn't take a glass bottle sort of for a picnic when you could take a PET bottle and it would do the same job, and you don't have to lumber it all the way home clinking in your rucksack.
Yeah, but you see a lot of retailers adopting the can format in the smaller sizes, and you know the can is hugely popular across the beverage industry right now. When craft beer really actually opened up the door for cans, you know, the ability to brand it, you know, really good sensory experience, really good shelf life, light protection. You know, I'm not trying to sell cans here, but it's a bloody good format. But for the right markets, and we think it's those smaller consumption occasions, and you know, cost does play a role here, and you know, the can is more energy required to produce it. You know, the tin plate market, I think it's a bit more challenging to manage than PET, that's for sure. There's quite lengthy supply chains associated with that. 750 mil, good price point, good margin point, good experience. You know, if you're at an event and you're unable to sell glass, and that's in a PET bottle, you know, sharing wine from a 750 mil PET bottle is going to be better than, you know, buying four or five cans at the associated price point. I think it's going to be better value, and it's going to be a better consumption experience.
I think aluminium cans and single serve is right. You know, that's all I've seen as wines in a single serve, but you know, I buy a 500 ml can of Foster's every now and then, and you know, you can get a decent amount of plonk in a can if you wanted to go down that route. It's just that it hasn't been as popular.
Yeah, I think people are just used to, when you have a can, that's one serving. So you're used to having a pint of beer. If you had a pint of wine in your hand, you'd be more inclined to maybe sort of keep going with the pint of wine. So I think the smaller formats just work because it's what people are used to. But yeah. But also, if you're a wine producer and you're set up to run 750 ml bottles, popping ours on your line is significantly easier than getting a canning line installed or borrowing a canning line, which a lot of people do, and learning how to do that.
Which has a lower carbon footprint, a PET bottle or a aluminium can? If let's say you had to use three aluminium cans to make up one 750.
I don't know the figures, but I think because it's a metal and you need to warm it and form it, I'd assume they're either relatively similar or PET maybe edges out, but I don't know the...
Okay.
And I think the other disadvantage of the can is that you can't take that manufacturing in-house. You know, it's made by a specialised manufacturing process. It's then transported beyond what you've described. You know, however, the mobile canning guys have done a fantastic job really pushing wine into these can formats, making it accessible for smaller brands in smaller quantities because the market's quite fragmented. But yeah, horses for courses, you know. We respect the can, and equally we think the PET wine bottle is going to play a key role in the packaging mix to help, you know, reduce carbon.
The thing about the plastic bottle is plastic is oil based. How much recycled plastic can you put in one of these things?
So in the bottle you see there's none. However, we can dose up to 100%. That's something we're very comfortable with across our business. I think our operation in Sweden is handling 50% on an average across our entire customer base, and it's quite big. So 100% is possible. Any virgin plastic to take out of production is a benefit. And if you look at the carbon footprint of a PET bottle, the maximum benefit in terms of reducing your carbon comes from substituting, you know, virgin-based PET material with recycled material, and also the energy associated with the production. They're the two biggest levers to lower your carbon footprint. But it's about an 80% reduction when you introduce recycled content into that wine bottle and your carbon footprint.
Yeah, and I guess the other point to make is that even if you're just going from glass to PET, we know that for a standard bottle of wine, about half of your carbon emissions comes from the packaging. So if you're from everything from the viticulture to the processing of the wine, the glass bottle is pretty much half of your carbon emissions per bottle.
Yeah, I saw that in your notes. I disagree with that because I think normally that is half associated with the packaging, and then the transportation as well is usually where, whenever I've seen studies of carbon footprints of wineries, they do come up with about half is associated with the packaging, but it's packaging and transportation.
Yeah, and the transport is a variable element. So, you know, we try to just use an average view on that. I don't think we can be specific for every case, but, you know, agree with your comment on that one.
If you are looking at addressing your carbon footprint, packaging is probably the easiest place to start.
Yes.
And will have the biggest impact.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's a low-hanging fruit. I find, personally, I'm keen on them, but I just can't find wines that I'd want in a plastic bottle. Do you know what I mean? It's like there's a reason I don't buy that many bag and box, because they're just not the wines I would typically want to drink, as a general rule of thumb. And that's where my problem with plastic, and that question I raised with you, is how do you make sure that premium wines go into plastic? That's my concern. And you need some sort of wine that will do well in a plastic bottle. You know, like screw caps. New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc is better in a screw cap than it is on a cork. Absolutely. It's just a better closure for it, and just improves the quality of the wine on average. Is there a particular wine that plastic would just sing with? You know, is there something that you'd go, look, I don't know, you know, a red Bordeaux has got to be in plastic because it's the best thing for it. You know, there's no real compelling reason from a quality point of view. It's an environmental point of view is the argument that I'm hearing.
Yeah, I mean, the wine should be like for like in terms of flavour, but from an environmental benefit will be bigger. And obviously we love to see high quality wines in PET, and we're working to work with wineries to do that. So Hopefully in the coming years, as people become more familiar with it and start seeing on the shelf and start to trust it, then it makes sense for wineries to then start eking up their quality and reducing their glass footprint to their prestige wines, where they're expecting to lie down for 5-6 years to improve.
Yeah. And have you been working with any bottling lines? Because I imagine, you know, bringing a wine over in bulk from Australia, perhaps, running it through the bottling line in Bristol for Accolade or something like that. Is it still Accolade? I think they sold it, didn't they?
Yeah, they sold it.
But Accolade's old bottling line, I can't remember who bought it, with a plastic bottle. To me, that's it. You know, that makes that. Like, normally you bring it in bulk from Australia to England, bottle and glass. That has about the same carbon footprint as bringing a wine up from around the Northern Rhone into England, because the transportation is really bad in a truck compared to a boat. And you could bring it in bulk and then bottle it in glass, and all of a sudden it's very hard for anyone to compete with a glass bottle anywhere in Europe. Have you been talking to the bulk bottling guys? And
so we're running different trials on different lines. And really it's around the closure and the torque that's required to secure that. And that's where mostly the change comes. So change parts can be required. You know, it's really, you know, different lines behave in different ways. So it's case by case. But we have a lot of experience in the German market, refillable PET bottles, where our bottles substitute for glass.
Yeah.
So we don't want to compromise on speed on the line. And we want to maintain that performance and, not add any additional costs to, you know, the integration of PET into that process.
Is that a problem? Can you not run the lines at the same speed with plastic bottles?
Generally can, but again, I'm probably not an expert in this area. We've got a technical resource that goes out into the market and supports our customers to do that. So I think rather than me try and give you an answer there, we do have a team of experts that can support.
All right. I think we'll wrap it up there, guys.
Well, cheers. Thanks.
Excellent. Thanks for the
chat.
Thanks
very much, guys.